The Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. It is our Halloween spooktacular today. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan Larson of University of Kentucky.
I'm your second host, Jody Green from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
And I'm your third host, Michael Scavarla from Penn State.
And we have convened together today in this scary campfire surrounded by ghosts and spider webs and witches to talk to you about a scary movie called Them. And we're going to be going through it bit by bit, plot point by plot point, right? We're just going to describe it. We're going to act it out here on the airwaves, I think, is our plan, right?
Mike, sure.
Mike is going to be the ants. Jody is going to be the scientists. Perfect. I love it. Everything about it is the best. But yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. It is Halloween time here in the United States, and people are celebrating. Jody's been having a good time of late. She went out to a conference and had a really exciting visit. Where was it at?
So I was in San Diego at the convention center. It was Pest World. I think there was like 4,000 people there from all over the world. Wow. I met people from South America, people from China. And the exhibit hall is massive. Things that you wouldn't even think about. I mean, there's like all sorts of, you know, glue boards and traps and bird things and like vehicles and software for people who run companies, and then all the chemical companies and any type of like monitoring system, like the ones that go in hotels that hook up to USB where the bed bug crawls in the back and it takes a picture of it and it closes and then the technician knows that there's a bed bug. I don't know. It's crazy stuff, like all different types of new technologies. It was pretty neat to be there. And I got to talk to a lot of the extension people at University of California. Cool. They have a great group. So that was fun.
That sounds like a good conference.
Yeah, it was cool. I got to do a talk. So I could never afford to go to this place. But NPMA invited me to do an educational session. So I did a 1-hour talk and it was called Get Nitpicky with Pests on Kids. Look at this. Okay, so I was at this BASF booth. And they take a picture of you on an iPad, and then you pick like a certain, I don't know, they've got, you know, certain template or whatever. I picked ants, and look what they made me. It's like ants crawling out of one nostril. It like it goes
behind. Oh, that's so creepy.
It really is what nightmares are made of. Like I have ants in my eyes, my eyebrows, like everything.
Can that be the image for our episode today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. Like, look at, isn't that crazy? It's so gross.
Totally.
Toddler.
I'm glad you had a really great conference.
Yeah, well, thanks. It was fun. There was a Pest World Gives Back, and I got to stuff backpacks full of school supplies for kids. And I don't know, it was pretty neat. It was huge. So, I mean, usually when you're with a company or, you know, we go to conferences for ESA, you're busy, like your schedule's packed.
Right.
I didn't really have a packed schedule, so I got to, you know, experience San Diego and the conference. So it was pretty neat. And I got to meet my old advisor. So Gary Bennett was out there.
Nice.
Oh, Gary Bennett. How fun.
Yeah. You know what was so crazy? So I thought we were going to go for drinks or something. He texts me and he says, how about we go for drinks at 3:00? It was right before my talk. Gary Bennett. I was like, I'm giving you a talk. He's like, yeah, I know. We should go for drinks. I'm like, no. So he shows up. I don't know if he had an alcoholic beverage or it was water, but he shows up at my talk and he's sitting like in the front row with his Hawaiian shirt on, like happy to be there. He's like, you missed a good time.
If that's not the picture of retirement, I don't know what is.
Yes, I know. I'm so proud of him.
And now you're back in Nebraska. I see you've decorated your office for the spooky time of the year. If we look behind you.
Actually, it is always going to be there.
Always
I get all mostly accurate spider things after Halloween because it's on sale, and then I keep it up all year round, and then people don't come into my office.
Do you decorate your house for Halloween?
No.
Mike, have you been doing some Halloween decorating?
I carved a pumpkin.
Yeah,
that's about all I've done. Yeah.
What is on the pumpkin?
I went with an entomology theme this year because it seemed appropriate. I've done other themes in the past. So like last year, no, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, even when the Rosetta spacecraft was out and the Philae lander went down on Comet P67, I think. I did a Rosetta Philae pumpkin, which turned out really good. This year, however, stayed a little closer to home.
Literally.
Well, what's that?
Literally.
Yeah. And I made a spoonwing pumpkin. So spoonwings are this group of neuropterans. They're related to green lacewings and brown lacewings, and that people might be familiar with. But they're found in Europe, Australia, Asia, and neotropical regions, but we don't have them in North America. And they're really neat because they're reasonably large and they've got big showy wings. They kind of act more like butterflies than most other neuropterans. They only feed on nectar. So they're really cool, I think. And they've got these very distinct, at least the species I used, Nemoptera sinuata. They've got these really starkly colored, like clear and black wings and this really distinct pattern. So it is good for pumpkin carving because it's, you know, very contrasting.
Right.
And I thought it turned out really well.
Yes. And you have it on Twitter and it is beautiful. It's beautiful.
Anything else you're throwing up for Halloween decorations that are entomology themed?
No.
No? No big fake cobwebs?
No, I don't really get into decorating the house for holidays. My wife does, but we put out like some of those window stickers that you get. Nice. Put us bats. We hung a banner that says Happy Halloween, but that's about it.
Are you guys going to dress up this year?
We are. We've been working on costumes for the... So I've got 3 kids, 4 and under. And my oldest son is obsessed with trains. So he is going to be a locomotive. And we made a cardboard locomotive he can wear. And then our middle daughter, who is 2, is going to be a boxcar. And then our youngest daughter, who is less than a year, is going to ride around in a wagon. And she is going to be another boxcar in the train.
Are you the conductor?
I'm going to be a railroad crossing sign.
Okay. I love it. Jody, are you dressing up?
Nice. No. I am the least festive, minimalistic person. That's why people would never know that my house has like nothing on the walls. I have no pictures, anything.
Right.
Everything I have is here in the office. So it looks like a crazy mess. But my daughter, she wanted to be a grumpy old lady. So she has like this like gray wig, really curly with curlers in it. She wears like a bathrobe and a giant handbag and a cane. And anytime you talk to her, she goes, "What?"
It's perfect.
What about you guys?
Here in Kentucky? My daughter's going to be Wonder Woman. She's been very excited about that for about a month since we first bought her costume. I've got some pirate gear. I'm thinking about being a pirate, maybe adapting it somehow into a minute pirate bug kind of theme like I used to do in the office there in Nebraska. But that's all my plan. I've got a bunch of pumpkins. We have this big retaining wall in front of our house, and I'm thinking about it's got like tiers to it, and I kind of want to layer pumpkins on it. And make it like 50 pumpkins strong in the front and hand out flyers.
You love pumpkin carving.
I do love pumpkin carving. I'm a little more traditional than Mike, though. I haven't done a scientific theme. I just do lots of faces. I love reading about jack-o'-lanterns and traditions like that from the old world.
Well, I should say, we did do faces. So my kids each, my oldest two, got a pumpkin each. And so I hollowed it out and then I asked them, what kind of face they want. It's like, you want triangle eyes or circle eyes? And then I'd carve whatever they asked. And do you want a happy face or a scary face? So they got the pumpkin that they wanted and watched me carve it like for them. So it was.
Oh, that's some good family shenanigans there.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Do you guys eat the pumpkin after? Like, do you make soup or seeds or whatever?
So I do keep the seeds. We, from the kids' pumpkins, I salted and seasoned them yesterday and baked them up, and we are almost out now because we skipped dinner and just ate pumpkin seeds, which is probably less than healthy, but it was delicious.
I think you'll be okay.
Yeah. And because the pumpkins that we got were kind of thick-fleshed, it was a little too thick for me, for my pumpkin to carve and like make the thin sections that the light can shine through. I thinned it down on the inside with a spoon. And so I kept all of that extra like inside pumpkin bit. I saved it and I'm going to cook it up for a pie.
Nice.
Have you been watching any spooky movies to get into the season?
Yes. One in particular.
Yeah. What was it?
I just watched one on Friday.
Is it the one that we're going to talk about today?
Yeah.
Are we just being awkward for the sake of being awkward?
Well, and we are awkward.
We are awkward, but it's part of our charm, I believe.
Did you watch one movie, Jonathan?
I did. I watched the movie Them.
I guess, so when I was watching it, I tweeted some, I took photos of the movie on my television and tweeted them out, seeing if anybody could guess what it is. And nobody took me up on it. So I guess nobody tried or couldn't guess it. But Jonathan, you're right. We watched Them. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
I do.
The history of the movie or whatever?
It's a 1954 film. It's a B movie kind of sci-fi deal. And if you look at the history of it, it's one of the first nuclear monster movies that came out, which was a big trend during the advent of the atomic age at this time in the early 50s. And if Wikipedia and some other sources are to be believed, it's the first big bug film that came out. So this whole category that includes Them and Tarantula and Eight-Legged Freaks and all those other kinds of big critter movies, this is one of the first ones to really get out there and get into the public sphere. It was directed by Gordon Douglas. It stars several big name people. One of the ones that really kind of shocked me that I didn't remember being in the movie was Edmund Gwynn, who is also Santa Claus in Miracle on 34th Street. I heard his voice and I was like, holy crap, that's Santa Claus. And he's here to be a myrmecologist.
You know who I was surprised to see in it was James Whitmore, who I guess older folks may be more familiar with, but I knew him mostly from Shawshank Redemption when he played Brooks, the old librarian who keeps a raven in the prison with him.
Oh,
that sounds like
yeah.
You in the future. You're going to be a librarian with a raven.
In a prison?
Maybe not that part.
Okay. It doesn't end well for him either. So maybe that's not the best analogy for me.
Well, I've never seen Shawshank, so forgive me.
What? I've even seen that movie. That's a good movie.
It's one of the best.
You've already yelled at me for this before, Mike.
Well, it's been a while, and you haven't watched it in the meantime, so.
I've been busy. I was graduating and stuff.
That was a while ago. Let's be honest.
But we are talking about this movie. It was nominated for an Oscar for its special effects, which to a modern eye is laughable because they're big carpet ants that are Muppets, basically, I think. And it did win an award, the Best Sound Editing Award at the Golden Reel Award. So it was a big deal back in the day. Do either of you think you could kind of summarize the plot really quick, like in 35 seconds or less?
It's 10 years after the atomic bomb. There's these mutated ants under the ground in New Mexico. There's some mutation where they can come out of eggs and turn into like winged queens. They're killing people. And it's very scary.
Very scary. So we were in New Mexico around the atomic testing sites, but they got loose and they're in the water spillways of Los Angeles. So they made their way, obviously, for a large metropolitan area because it's a movie and that's got to happen. It can't just be out in the desert, New Mexico. So people die. People blow stuff up.
Yeah. I mean, the FBI is involved. The Department of Ag's involved. There's myrmecologists. There's children. There's storm drains. There's maps with pins. It's amazing.
It's got it all is what Jody's saying.
Yeah.
Before we get into like the parts about the ants themselves and the actual entomology, how well did you guys think it held up? Is like a 1954 movie compared to like it was obviously a big deal back in the day, but is it still watchable now? Did you enjoy it?
I found it watchable, I would say. I mean, there are tense moments. If I were to point to a part that I really thought was well done, it would be the beginning part where they actually find the little girl wandering in the desert alone and she won't speak to them. I thought that was an extremely tense several minutes of the film. Like it's very mysterious. What I have to imagine back in the day going into this, you probably didn't know that there were giant bugs in it. So, like, why is she alone? They find that tore up camper. Like, everything is very mysterious for quite some time. It's not in your face with the giant sci-fi-ness of it. So I like that part in the beginning.
The camper scene had one of my favorite lines from the movie. It wasn't caved in. It was caved out.
Yes. There are some real gems of dialogue in this movie.
Jody, what do you think? Did you like it? Like, just in general?
I have watched a lot of bug-related associated movies. I think compared to some other ones, it wasn't bad. It was, like, the oldest one I've seen. There was some parts I thought were really funny, and I kind of had to relate it back to today. I don't know. Just, it was funny that there was, like, just all of a sudden, like, oh, yeah, she's a myrmecologist. What? Can't you speak English so we can understand? You know, like.
I find the myrmecologists that show up, I find that to be a fascinating trope that seems to persist to this day, where there's an old doddering man entomologist and then, like, the beautiful young woman entomologist that has to fight against systemic sexism as well as the giant insect.
But yeah. I also thought it was interesting that they actually even had a woman in there that other than the mother of the boys, right? And so I was kind of shocked about that. Yeah, so I did not like the sound, so it was interesting that they won that award, but maybe that was where it seemed scary to me, because I did not like those stridulation sounds of the ants. Like, whenever you saw the ants or knew they were near, it's like that sound of them communicating.
Yeah, Mike, what was the sound?
No, it's not like that at all. I cannot reproduce it with a human vocal cords.
We'll have to layer our voices together to do it.
And then, like, a lot of things relating back today, like how everyone wants to burn every bug with fire, spiders, you know, burn it with fire. A lot of fire talk, a lot of fire killing and, like, flame torches and stuff in this movie. And then also a lot of, like, you know, philosophical statements. But they did say that this is a scientist's dream come true.
To get to see this happen?
Yeah. To have these beasts reigning over the earth.
I disagree.
Well, yeah, that's what I was like, what? It's that, I think, I don't know who said it, but it's like, biblical prophecy come true. Beasts reigning over the earth. This is a scientist's dream come true. Yeah, maybe they don't really know.
No, scientists. It was the old man scientist. They're standing at the ant mound in the desert, and he says something along those. Yeah, he's like, this is a biblical prophecy come to fruition. And the beast shall reign over the earth.
Yep.
What about you, Mike? How do you feel about it?
I mean, ignoring the blatant sexism that happened because it was 1954, I enjoyed it, actually. I thought it held up pretty well. My wife thought it was a slow beginning, so that tenseness that you felt, like the little girl and all of that, she didn't like it. She thought it was slow. Hmm. I've actually, this is like the fourth or fifth time I've seen it now, because I do enjoy it. It's not an every year watch, but we'll get into this. Not true things about ants or things that they mess up. So the entomologist in me cringes a little bit, but, you know, it's got some good action. You know, we complain about burn it with fire, but who doesn't like, you know, going at a giant ant with a flamethrower? Maybe it's just me.
That's a dream that a scientist has.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the special effects now look not great, but for 1954, they were good. Yeah. And there's something charming about it that I like. So
I was reading in IMDb about them. The viewer never sees more than three giant ants at one time, because that is all that were constructed.
That's all they can afford.
When we suggested watching, you know, them or another big bug movie for Halloween, it was like, this is my go-to. So
well, let's talk a little bit about that ant biology. You kind of hinted around about some of the things they get wrong and get right. When I first met you, you were big into ants. I don't know if that still holds up today. You used to even kind of raise some of them on your own. So is that one of the reasons you kind of like this movie, or?
Because I like ants?
Yeah.
Could be. I do like ants. I wouldn't consider myself an ant taxonomist. I'm more of an ant fan. Okay. I've certainly worked with them and identified my share of ants. But I haven't done, like, systematics with them or anything. Yeah, they get some things right, but they get a lot of things less than right. And not
okay. What What did they get right?
Well, they said that they identified the ants to species. Camponotus regina in one part of the movie and Camponotus reginus in another part of the movie. So they actually changed the specific epithet during the film.
A new paper came out. A phylogenetic tree came out during the course of the movie.
So I was curious if they're actually basing that on a real thing. Camponotus is a real genus that's carpenter ants that most people are familiar with. In the East, we've got Eastern black carpenter ants. They're the majority of the large black ants that you see on the sidewalk. They also can be home structural pests, so people are familiar with them. So Camponotus is a real group. I could not find anything about Camponotus regina. It could, you know, it roughly translate to something like the regina would be like queen. So it would be like the queen carpenter ants. So maybe they were just made up a specific epithet because these things are huge. But as far as like a real ant out there, I can't find anything for Camponotus regina. So I think they just made the name, the species name up. Camponotus typically nest in wood or cavities. So Eastern black carpenter ants, they destroy your house because they're carving tunnels and nest chambers in the wood. Out in nature, carve cavities into rotting logs and rotting wood structures. Other species like Camponotus neurarticus, the small carpenter ant, nest in cavities. In homes, you'll find them around like the wall voids around your window. They don't actually bore into the wood. They're just nesting in the cavities. To have Camponotus like that just out making mounds in the desert was a little weird. Maybe that's my Eastern North America bias, that most of ours are wood nesters. Maybe you got some desert Camponotus that are ground nesters like that, but I thought that was a little bit weird. First guy that they find that was killed by the ants was filled with formic acid. So I had a couple questions about that. How did they determine that it was formic acid he was filled with?
Enough formic acid to kill 20 men.
Yeah.
Which is that?
A lot, I guess. The thing about Camponotus and other formicine ants is they don't have a stinger. They've got a acidopore, so they spray the acid out. It's kind of like they just spray it out there. They don't inject it. So I don't know how he was filled with formic acid, given they don't have stingers. I did think it was funny. There's a scene with the little girl when they kind of snap her out of her trance or whatever. One of the scientists is like, pour me some formic acid and like let her sniff it. Like, why are they just carrying a bottle of formic acid around? Like, they just have it.
They probably got it out of that first guy.
It seemed really weird. Other things they got right, well, I guess wrong, towards like the back half of the middle, the myrmecologist shows some government guys a video of ants, and he's trying to convince them that ants are like, you know, it's going to be bad because ants form these colonies and they're social. And it keeps, the video itself keeps cutting between videos of harvester ants, which are not Camponotus. They're a different group of ants. And then it cuts to some video of carpenter ants, and then it cuts back to videos of harvester ants again, and it kind of mishmashes what ants they're including in the video. And maybe that's just me nitpicking.
No. I think that could help introduce some confusion to people watching it. Like, they think that carpenter ants are going to go out and harvest leaves and do all that kind of stuff.
I think that's like the entomologist's catch, though, right? Like when you see like Madagascar hissing roaches in a movie, and it's like in their basement, you're like, oh my gosh, not even close.
Or like Men in Black, where they kick the trash, the dumpster, and all these hissing cockroaches fall out.
Yes, yeah. It's like that,
yes,
right?
That the thing that bothers me about that is it's easy enough to get American cockroaches.
I would argue I understand that, like, if you knock a bunch of Madagascars out of a cockroach bin, a trash can, they're probably just going to sit there. Like,
yeah,
you can get them.
Yeah, they act better than the Americans and the Germans do. So
I can see that, yeah. And then the last thing they got, they did get right. They did mention that male ants die soon after mating, which is true. They mentioned that the queen cuts off her wings or loses or sheds them after mating. So that all is true as well. It's kind of a mishmash of things that they got right, things that they got wrong. And the things that they got wrong are weird because it's not like, well, we just scaled up an ant. There's no giant ant, so we just made up things about them. It was, this is just not right ant biology, whether they're giant or normal sized.
Okay, can I ask some questions? When they said they're helpless without their antenna.
I had that written down too. Yeah, good catch.
Okay, so what do you think about that?
I think that's bunk. That's, they can see.
so they were shooting.
Yeah.
Okay, they were shooting.
It's certainly true that ants have a lot of communication via chemical signals, and they do use their antennae a lot. But they have eyes, they can see. They're maybe not great sight, but man, when you've got a 15-foot ant with giant eyes the size of your head, like, it's going to be able to see a human in front of it without its antennae. So that was silly.
Ants were the only creatures on Earth other than man to make war.
Yeah, I caught that too. It feels like there was a lot of anthropomorphizing of the ants. I mean, yeah, I guess ants go to war. Chimps go to war too. Mm-hmm. Like, there's other things that do.
And then what else? It smelled like a brood chamber.
I want to know what that smelled. Like, how do you know that?
Does it smell like formic acid? And then I thought it was interesting. Like, I actually took a picture of the screen, you know, when it said monitor all news 4 and it had that list.
Oh, yeah. Kidnappings,
missing persons, unsolved murders, alleged suicides, migrations of wildlife, thefts of sugar, syrups, and sweets, strange phenomena as flying saucers, strange odors, high-pitched sounds, and unnatural things alive or dead.
The sugar bits got me, because that is my one complaint about the movie, is it feels like they really shoehorned sugar in the beginning to, like, hint that it was ants. Yeah, it felt shoehorned in, and they didn't need to do that. Just give me the big ants.
Well, you know, because 40 pounds of sugar in the end were stolen from the train car, and that was the clue to find out where they were.
Yeah. No. So the train car bit I thought was okay, but, like, in the shop that they go to, it's like, well, there's just a drum with some sugar in it that not all the sugar is gone. I don't know.
Jonathan, what did you think?
About the biology of ants in the movie?
Or any comments about the movie?
I wanted more discussion about that chemical signaling that ants do, like the trail pheromones that they leave behind. I'd have to imagine a 15-foot long ant spraying formic acid behind it to leave a trail. Like, I think we would be able to smell that. Like, I think we could follow these pretty easily, either ourselves or with a bloodhound.
Yeah, that kind of gets at something. Like, presumably the sewers under Los Angeles would have then, like, an ant smell to them. Like,
right.
My question is, at one point they go question, like, the three people that were arrested at night. Like, they're the only three people that were out at night in Los Angeles. Like, there was no police presence out at night that they could have, like, there's literally nobody in this city that saw the giant ants in the waterway except the drunks. Like, that seems silly. Like, there's no other sign of them. So relating to this, the pheromones, like, that's a big ant colony. Those are big ants. I feel like they could have smelled them, maybe.
Smelling them here, I mean, they made a terrible noise, it sounded like, pretty consistently. It would echo out of the sewers, I have to imagine. There were a few things that I was like, I feel like we would have found these a little bit quicker, like the three of us, if we were involved with this movie, if we got called in to be the entomologists in a horror movie.
So let me ask you about that. They identify the ants by their footprints. Like, they take a cast of the ant footprint, send it off to the FBI, and then somehow the FBI decides it must be something for the Department of Agriculture, and it eventually makes its way to a myrmecologist who positively identifies the ants based on their footprints. Like, can you comment about that? Because it seems real silly to me.
I mean, it's in my Tracks and Signs of Invertebrates book. You take a big cast. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that was pretty bonkers to me, like the idea that I also didn't like the way it looked, because to me, like, the pre-tarsal claws and the way an ant's foot is hinged would have created a longer cast that would have been in the sand rather than it looked like a peg leg. It looked like a pirate would have left behind. Like, I would have looked for a pirate if I were them, not a giant ant.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's because I worked in a USDA lab where we did insect IDs. Like, I can just imagine them sending this cast up and people looking and be like, yeah, why are you sending this to us? Like, it never would have gotten to the myrmecologist, let alone the Department of Agriculture. I appreciate the shout outs to the Department of Ag. Like, that I like. It just seems like it never would have gotten there.
Well, and it seemed like the myrmecologists were there before they knew it was ants. So, like, you would think you would have to identify that it was ants and then bring in a myrmecologist. But the scientists just happened to be myrmecologists.
Yeah, like, they would have found a giant ant and shot it and be like, oh, shoot. Seems like they would have shot one of the giant ants and then brought in the myrmecologist after, like, we found these 15-foot ants. What are they? Why are they here? Instead of preemptively, the myrmecologist thinks it's an ant, but they're going to be real cagey and not tell anybody about it.
So I actually, that's the part that I did take some umbrage with, is like these scientists show up and they're very dodgy from the outset,
yeah,
right? Like they're secretive. They clearly know what's going on. Like they figured it out back in Washington, D.C., and they're just on the ground to confirm their suspicions. And I feel like this does play into maybe some of the paranoia that's present in the time of, look at what they did with the atomic bomb. That literally destroyed two cities, and we didn't know jack all about that. And they did it right in our backyard. And then we all of a sudden we had this mega weapon and we destroyed parts of Japan with it. Like, what else do scientists know that they're not telling us? And in this case, it's giant atomic ants hiding in the desert. But I felt like that was very, not anti-science, but very, you can't trust scientists because they're there to confirm their hypothesis first and foremost, and then deal with the fallout afterwards.
Yeah, they left that guy in like the psychiatric ward.
Right.
Told that guy not to like let him out.
Yeah.
I did like that line, though. We'll tell you when he's better.
Your government thanks you for your cooperation.
Yeah, that made me laugh. But I was like, man, you threw that dude under the bus.
So we kind of talked about some of the biology here. Would you say it was a scary movie? Does it meet your criteria to be a good horror film?
Okay, so I'll read what the criteria is, and you can say yes or no.
This is what makes a good horror film to Jody Green.
There's people in danger, and I put children. Children in danger. Suspense.
You guys, it was spooky, a little music. In the beginning, I guess.
Spooky music.
There's spooky music.
The fear of death.
Yeah.
Creepy crawly things is usually like in most horror movies.
True. And I mean,
right, some kind of creature.
Creature. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
And then like scary places.
So like the atomic testing site and the sewers?
Yeah. Storm drains or, you know, wherever he had to crawl through to get to the kids.
I would
and
say
then there's a thing behind him and they had to dig him out, you know, all that suspense. When things come tumbling down and then you have to save the person, but then in the end, like the hero, he like saved the kids and he died. He gets it. The ants kill him. So that's like a horror movie, right? Like one of your main characters gets killed by this creepy crawly. It's hard not to relate it back to like, oh, this was in the 50s. But I think it's like, it's a horror movie.
I agree. It is a horror movie. My aspect or the track I took with that is that it took something that's an everyday object, ants, and it twisted it into something terrifying. Just like I think a good horror film does, like a mirror or a spooky cabin, something that you might have seen sometime in your life, and then it says, but what if it was like this? And I think that adds to a lot of the scariness for me.
I was actually going to disagree at first. I didn't think it was very horrifying for a horror movie. The suspense in the beginning could have been pulled off a little bit better. Like, once the reveal happens, then, I don't know, it gets less scary. Like, I feel like them putting the kids in danger was a little ham-fisted. They wanted to put kids in danger, so, like, they did. It felt contrived, I guess. I guess initially I wouldn't have categorized it as a horror movie, but I also might say horror movies and like monster movies are a little bit different. Like it felt more like a monster movie, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't even think too much of it until I asked a friend's son, like, hey, have you seen this movie? Because he watches a lot of movies, Jack. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, no, I don't care much for horror movies, Miss Jody. And I was like, oh. Like, I didn't think of it that way. And so I was like, oh, yeah, because, you know, I was just kind of doing it as an assignment and I'm an entomologist and I love ants. So I guess it depends where you're coming from.
Yeah, like I wouldn't let my 4-year-old watch it because I could see that being scary.
For sure. So I guess one of the things I would wrap up our discussion with maybe is, why do you think we're so fascinated by this idea of giant insects? I feel like that comes up a lot in fiction and movies. So what is it about giant bugs that freaks people out?
They're just so alien. Like, they're very unlike us. They're, as far as living things go, they're, like, as unlike us as you can get on the planet. Like, you look at a fish and we're like, well, it's still a vertebrate. Like, I can relate to having a backbone. But, like, insects and invertebrates are just so, like, they're just not at all like us. They're the most alien thing you can get. Mm-hmm. I guess, in terrestrial environments that we would normally see. But they're also small, so they're not, like, dangerous for the most part. But you make them big, and it's like, now it's a giant alien.
Right. Their bodies are kind of horrifying. Like, you get some of that body horror kind of aspect to it with their weird exoskeletons. The giant stinger they showed at one point in the film was really freaky.
Did they show a giant stinger?
Did they? I don't remember that either.
Yeah,
because
he, like, points at it, and he says, this is the sting. This is where the formic acid comes from.
Oh, I missed that bit.
Oh, so then that's wrong. Totally,
yeah.
That's totally then wrong. Mike would be like, that's wrong.
Yeah, I missed that. That's not how Campanotus are. They don't have stingers.
Right. Well,
these are mutants.
Huh. They are mutants.
I also wonder, I was interested in the choice of ants. Like, if this is the first big bug movie, why ants? And whenever I talk to people about ants, I feel like they always come up with some weird, like, communist, socialist angle on them. Like, a lot of folks I talk to, they're like, oh, yeah, those are the communist bugs, which I find very strange. And at this time, we would be very anti-communist. So I wonder if fed into one of the reasons why they chose ants. Like, it could have been a mantis. It could have been a giant water bug that got mutated, but it was ants.
You think it was tying into the Red Scare?
I wonder. I wonder. I don't know if that is 100% true or not, but that's kind of my read on it.
I like that.
I always think it has to do with because they're social insects, so there's more of them, and they can work together, and that's more, I think that's scarier because it relates it more to, like, humans,
yes,
social societies. So it's like they can take over, you know, if it's like one mantid, how are they going to get all the other mantids together? Because it's about the numbers, right? So it's like it would be the size and then the numbers, and because I guess the sociobiologist kind of stuff.
Which is a plot point in this, like the fact that ant colonies can split and bud and send out reproductives. That's a big aspect of this because they kill the Los Alamos colony only to discover that the queens have already hatched and flying.
Do you think part of it too is ants are typically underground or hidden, at least? Like if it's a giant mantis, like you just find the giant mantis stomping around New Mexico and hit it with a fighter jet. Like the ants are hidden. And like they're in Los Angeles in the sewer tunnel, like you can't see them in the tunnels. They're down there. You got to go into their habitat to get them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's like there's queens and broods and babies and like the princesses was a little weird to me.
That is a little weird.
Yeah.
There's also the noise, right, Mike?
I suggest maybe we could do a Halloween movie special every year because there are a lot of big bug movies.
It's true.
So if you've got a favorite big bug movie you'd like us to review next year, give us some ideas.
Yes, we would very much appreciate that. As long as we can get it on Amazon Prime or something to watch. Don't make it some sort of like obscure German Danish film that I have to buy on the black market.
Have either of you ever seen Eight-Legged Freaks?
Yes. One of my favorite childhood
Is it any
movies.
Good?
Yes, I like Eight-Legged Freaks.
I've never seen it, but big spiders seem like it could be fun.
Eight-Legged Freaks, there's a bunch of different species of spider in it, and it's like purposefully B-movie material. Like that's what they're shooting for. David Arquette sells it real well. When I first started this, I did The Swarm, and it has Michael Caine in it for some reason. And,
really?
Yeah. It's about killer bees coming up from Mexico and taking over the Southwest.
I think I saw that on TV when I was a child.
Yeah. Ticks from 1993. A group of troubled teenagers are led by social workers on a California wilderness retreat, not knowing that the woods they're camping in have become infested by mutated, blood-sucking ticks.
Nice.
Do you remember Mansquito?
I've never even heard of that.
Oh, it was a sci-fi original. About a guy that becomes half mosquito.
Huh.
Hey, I mean, related to that, we could watch The Fly.
The Fly,
either
that'd be a good
original
one.
Or like the
newer. I've never seen that.
With
Jeff Goldblum.
Yes.
Starship that Troopers, that would count.
Oh,
Are they insects though, or are they just monsters?
They're insect aliens.
Yeah, okay. I actually really like Starship Troopers, but like because it's bad.
Right. Here's a good one. Bugs, a 2003 TV movie. An entomologist accompanies a team of commandos to prevent prehistoric insects from escaping a subway system. Mega Scorpions, also from 2003.
Mega Scorpion.
Residents of a halfway house are bombarded by 6-foot-long killer scorpions. a horror comedy homage to the giant mutant bug films of the 1950s. The Deadly Mantis, 1957, a giant prehistoric praying mantis recently freed from Arctic ice, voraciously preys on the American military at the DEW line and works its way south.
That I feel like we would have a lot to tear that into, like giant mantis in the ice.
Attack of the Giant Leeches, 2008.
Wow.
Earth versus the Spider. A shy, obsessive comic book fan gets injected with an experimental serum of a lab that is studying how to give humans the abilities of spiders. Stars Dan Aykroyd.
Like, what grant did they get? We want to inject people with stuff.
Empire of the Ants. I also watched that one for an old arthropod. Where a con artist, played by Joan Collins, is trying to sell bogus real estate, and the area is overrun by giant ant colonies.
Was it any good?
It's bad in its own special way. So we hope that we've convinced you to give them a try this year for your Halloween viewing season. It's a pretty fun movie. It's got lots of entomology bits in it. We hope that we have illuminated some of the inaccuracies for you, and maybe you can spot a few that we missed, and you can write us in. You can find us on the web at arthro-pod.blogspot.com. Let us know what you think of them or any of your other favorite giant bug movies that are out there. You can find the show on Twitter, arthro_podshow. You can find me. I'm at Bugman John.
I'm at Jody Bugs Me, UNL.
And I'm at mscavarla36.
Still. But we thank you for listening. If you want to help support the show, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher or any other podcaster app. Leave us a review and some stars if you would like, and help to spread the word about the show. We would greatly appreciate it. And we hope that you have a very happy Halloween.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time. Same bug time, same bug channel, as the Arthropod Gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.
Mike, if you could have any kind of wings, what would you choose?
Ooh, hawk wings. I mean, that seems pretty obvious, right?
Jody, if you could have any kind of tail, what tail would you have?
Can I have a scorpion tail?
You absolutely can, because this is a question about what you want.
Just imagine how many people I would just sting. Like, I wouldn't even have to say anything. I would just be like,
what if you said that and it's like one of those mean genies that, because I assume it's like a magic lamp that we're doing here, and it's like, oh, you get a little scorpion tail, but it's only like 3 inches long, so it's like pretty useless.
It just comes out of your tailbone.
Yeah,
and then I would still have to wear pants over top of it. How awkward would that be?
I think
I'd be like, oh, that's just my scorpion tail.
I can't sit anymore. Scorpion tail gets in the way, and you have to get really close to me so I can sting you. Like, our butts have to touch so I can sting someone. That would be terrible. I don't want that. I don't want a mini scorpion tail.
You ruined her fantasy, Mike.